The young woman took a pink piece of paper from her handbag, got up from the red leather chair, put the paper on Nero Wolfe's desk, and sat down again. Feeling it my duty to keep myself informed and also to save Wolfe the exertion of leaning forward and reaching so far, I arose and crossed to hand the paper to him after a glance at it. It was a check for $5,000, dated that day, August 14th, made out to him, and signed Margaret Mion. He gave a look and dropped it back on the desk.
"I thought," she said, "perhaps that would be the best way to start the conversation."
In my chair at my desk, taking her in, I was readjusting my attitude. When early that Sunday afternoon she had phoned for an appointment, I had dug up a vague recollection of a picture of her in the paper some months back, and had decided it would be no treat to meet her. But now I was hedging.
Her appeal wasn't what she had, which was only so-so, but what she did with it.
I don't mean tricks. Her mouth wasn't attractive, even when she smiled. But the smile was. Her eyes were just a pair of brown eyes, nothing at all sensational. But it was a pleasure to watch them move around, from Wolfe to me to the man who had come with her, seated off to her left. I guessed she had maybe 3 years to go to reach 30.
"Don't you think," the man asked her, "we should get some questions answered first?"
His tone was strained and a little harsh, and his face matched it. He was worried and didn't care who knew it. With his deep-set gray eyes and well-fitted jaw, he might, on a happier day, have passed for a leader of men. But not as he now sat. Something was eating him. When Mrs. Mion had introduced him as Mr. Frederick Wepler, I had recognized the name of the music critic of the Gazette. But I couldn't remember whether he had been mentioned in the newspaper accounts of the event that had caused the publication of Mrs. Mion's picture. She shook her head at him, not arbitrarily.
"It wouldn't help Fred, really. We'll just have to tell it and see what he says."
She smiled at Wolfe. Or maybe it wasn't actually a smile, but just her way of handling her lips.
"Mr. Wepler wasn't quite sure we should come to see you, and I had to persuade him. Men are more cautious than women, aren't they?"
"Yes," Wolfe agreed, and added, "Thank heaven."
She nodded.
"I suppose so."
She gestured.
"I brought that check with me to show that we really mean it. We're in trouble, and we want you to get us out. We want to get married, and we can't. That is, if I should just speak for myself, I want to marry him."
She looked at Wepler, and this time it was unquestionably a smile.
"Do you want to marry me, Fred?"
"Yes," he muttered.
Then he suddenly jerked his chin up and looked defiantly at Wolfe.
"You understand this is embarrassing, don't you? It's none of your business, but we've come to get your help. I'm 34 years old, and this is the first time I've ever been—"
He stopped. In a moment he said stiffly, "I am in love with Mrs. Mion, and I want to marry her more than I have ever wanted anything in my life." His eyes went to his love, and he murmured a plea.
"Peggy."
Wolfe grunted.
"I accept that as proven. You both want to get married. Why don't you?"
"Because we can't," Peggy said. "We simply can't. It's on account. You may remember reading about my husband's death in April, 4 months ago. Alberto Mion, the opera singer."
"Vaguely, you'd better refresh my memory."
"Well, he killed himself.